Today we have another Open Airways podcast, and today we have Wilma Vinton, and she's here to share an interesting story with us. So would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Wilma Vinton. I'm from Fairbanks, Alaska. I respond with Steese Volunteer Fire Department. I am their assistant chief of EMS and heavily involved in the training side of it. I also respond as a duty chief, and I also work with Interior Region EMS Council, which is the regional organization that does all the testing, train the trainer, state testing and things. And I have brought to you an incident that we had. It was the 4th of July about 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, but it was a moose versus motorcycle. And in this particular case, for once, the guy on the motorcycle actually won because the moose died and he did not. But it was an interesting call in that when you got to realize that our area covers about 2,300 square miles. When he had his accident, he was 30 miles from our ambulance service, and he was tootling down the road at what he believes to be 70 miles an hour on his way coming back from a little place up north. He had decided to take a nice, beautiful drive on a nice July evening. Now, bearing in mind, we don't get darkness in July, so he has lots of daylight. He was going down a pretty straight stretch when he didn't see the moose come run up, and the next thing he knows, he doesn't remember anything after that. What happened was, why this makes this such an interesting call, is that he had everything there, everything in place. The continuum of care was amazing, and I think that played a major role in the fact that he survived. He was a 47-year-old male. He was, when he first hit the moose, there were some folks that were driving behind, which is really amazing because this is a pretty rural area, and it's unusual to have more than one vehicle on there at any given time within 15 or 20 minutes. The vehicle behind him actually had a nurse and a PA in the car, so they were the first ones on scene. They immediately opened his airway for him and maintained C-spine, stayed with him. This is an area that doesn't have good cell coverage, so they had to go down the road about 15 miles or so to get 911 called, and so they sent somebody down. And in the meantime, they helped him, you know, talk to him. He was not really responsive as far as to verbal, but was responsive to pain, but just kept talking to him, and he trying to keep him under control. The moose was still in the middle of the road. There's some amazing pictures. If you happen to be a member of National Association of EMS educators, in the trade post, there's actually a slideshow that shows you the situation. There was bystanders there taking pictures, and he brought them to us. When the ambulance arrived, they noted that he had still had the helmet in place and that there had been some vomiting, so they removed the maintained C-spine and removed the helmet. He was only responsive to pain. He had no really major bleeding, which was pretty amazing given the impact of this. His airway was open and he was breathing shallowly, but he had didn't appear to be bleeding heavily, so they, you know, did a quick assessment. What they found in that assessment was they had a deformity in his clavicle. They had a right leg deformity. They had a puncture just distal to his femur. He had sluggish pulses and lung sounds that were shallow but there. Right wrist was angulated. His right leg obviously was angulated or deformed. He had a deformity in his shoulder. He still wasn't responding. And the cool thing is it took almost an hour for the ambulance to get there. So these bystanders had to deal with, you know, making sure with nothing, absolutely nothing, other than just their hands, you know, checking, make sure he wasn't bleeding badly. Luckily, he did not break anything, you know, did break the skin other than just a small little puncture wound from the fractured femur. And he wasn't, you know, didn't have any major lacerations. And that is all attributed to the fact that he had leathers on. He had a leather jacket. He had leather pants on. He had good leather boots. And so then when the ambulance arrived and we transported him, we got him into the hospital. It was his lucky day. They had just opened the brand new hospital ER that we had. It was opening day of the ER in Fairbanks. And our old ER had, you know, like two or three trauma rooms, and it was very compact and, you know, not a lot of space. Our new ER has, I think it is something like 25 rooms with two big trauma rooms and two nursing pods. Now, that may not sound like much to you guys, but to us, we had one little tiny nursing pod. Now we've got two. So nobody knew where anything was. You know, it's brand new. They just opened it. But they were able to shine with this. They actually got, you know, did a complete assessment of him and realized right away that we couldn't handle it. Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, although is a it's a level 4 trauma hospital because we don't have a neurosurgeon. And so it was obvious he had head injuries, so he was going to have to go out. Now, when you leave Fairbanks, you have to go out by fixed wing, and it is a 400-mile flight to Anchorage. So they needed to package this poor guy. What they found there at FMH was that he had a fracture of C2. He had a compound fracture of T12. He had left pneumothorax. He had multiple rib fractures, right clavicle fracture, right forearm fracture, right femur fracture. And he had a subarachnoid hemorrhage as well as a subdermal hemorrhage. So that was immediate. He was going to be flown out. So out he went. Flew to Anchorage, and he says, I don't remember any of this except that I was sort of in a fog, even though he said he knew stuff was going on and around him, but he was pretty much in a fog. And about 3 weeks after the accident, he said, what the doctors tell him is that the bleeding swelling had gone down enough for him to actually start firing synapses again. He says, I just woke up and I went, wow, I think I hit a moose. and no recollection of anything prior to that. Just like, wow. But what
for
he found
weeks.
Out, pardon?
For 3 weeks.
For 3 weeks. He had no recollection. So what's awesome is he had a pretty extensive recovery given the injuries. But now, about a year after the accident, he contacted our fire department and he says, hey, I got to talk to you guys. You guys are amazing. You know, the care that I got obviously had to be great given the extent of my injuries. And so he came to the station and talked to us, and he brought his helmet. Now, this helmet, you know, when you're on scene, the last thing you look at is the helmet. It's like, you know, we just, you know, you kind of do. You recognize that it's got something going on with it. You write down that there was a dent in the helmet and your run report, and this last thing you think about. But he brought it in, and this helmet literally saved his life. He said that he was coming up, just tootling down the road. He's going way too fast, but there was no alcohol involved. He was just out for a beautiful 4th of July drive. And he saw this moose and couldn't avoid it. It was, you know, moose are big. They weigh about 1,000 pounds. The problem with moose is they're very tall. And so when you hit them, they fly over you. Their center of gravity is high. So when you hit them, and that's exactly what happened, he hit it and it flew over him and smashed him to the ground. And that's where he ended up with all of the injuries. So he said, but the continuum of care that he had, the fact that he had the first responder who was, you know, had enough training to be able to do what needed to be done to keep him alive until the ambulance could get there. The fact that the ambulance, although we had such a long transport, we weren't able to get IVs into him. And this is at a time when we didn't have IOs. And so because he had so much trauma to his arms, they were having a real difficult time getting an IV in. But he maintained his blood pressure pretty well throughout. Young, healthy, that was the key. Got him to the hospital, and then finding out that, you know, it's like, this is an open house, and guess what we have? So it's a pretty amazing story. It shows that as we work as a team, no matter first responder all the way to the hospital, we can keep people alive, especially with significant injuries.
You were saying that the first responders were just there by complete blind luck?
They were driving behind him.
Wow. Do you think he wouldn't have recovered as well had they not been there?
Oh, I'm sure he wouldn't have.
Because
his airway was compromised. That was the one thing. His airway was compromised when he had it. The nurse said that he had the position that he was in and the way his head was. Had she not been there to be able to open his airway immediately, chances were pretty slim that he would have survived the impact. He was all crumpled up and just not in a position to be able to breathe well. So that was amazing right there.
Do you know, was the moose on him when they found him, or was he?
No. What happens is when, you know, if you have to see the pictures, because the moose is like laying beside him, what happens is as you hit the moose, it hits you, and then its momentum keeps it going. And it literally, and luckily it was a small, probably a yearling. So the weight of this one was probably more like 750 pounds versus the 1,000 to 1,500 pounds that they can be. So, I mean, that was the other thing going for him, is he hit a small moose rather than a larger one.
Wow. You said the weather's nice then in July? Or?
Oh, yes, it's gorgeous. The only bad thing, and the first responders all commented about this, is we have 8 million mosquitoes. So although he didn't bloodlet, most of the responders bloodlet, because they were really good about keeping them off him. But
yeah,
they were well-drained.
How long do you think he spent at Fairbanks Memorial before
about,
he was...
About 2 hours.
2 hours, okay.
2 hours there, and then they got him on the plane and
so someone identified that there was some sort of head trauma.
Yeah. I mean, the extent of his injuries were pretty obvious, and his side of his face was pretty swollen, so, you know, it was pretty obvious, and he did have a skull fracture. They did a CT scan immediately,
okay.
So that was the other good thing, is we had just got the CT scanner, the full-body CT scanner, in the new ER, so it's like the cards were all right for him.
Yeah, a lucky guy.
Yes, and he appreciates that, and so he's been a great help with us as far as he goes to schools and talks to them about the importance of wearing helmets and good clothing, and it's been a changing point in his life as well, because he's a single father. He realized that, he said he's not going to get back on the motorcycle now till his daughter is of age where she can take care of herself. She was 5 years old.
Wow.
So he realized that at the time that he's all she had left, and he put himself at risk that he didn't have to. So
That's a great story.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Turn of events anyway.
Yeah, no, that's great that he's you know, talking about importance of helmet safety, and you know, when I always see motorcycles without helmets, I'm just, oh gosh.
You want to stop and slap them.
Yeah.
Want to stop and say, do you realize that you are nothing more than an organ donor when you don't wear a helmet?
Yeah.
And 70 miles an hour hitting a solid wall is pretty amazing that he survived it.
Are there any major, I guess I don't know much about the highway system in Alaska. Was it a major road or was it a...
No, it wasn't. We have two roads there's only three roads in Alaska, Highway 1, 2, and 3, and they all lead to Fairbanks. You come in Tok, and you drive 250 miles from Tok to Fairbanks on one highway. You can go from Fairbanks to Anchorage down south, 360 miles, and then you cross over from Anchorage back to Tok on the other highway, and it's, again, about another 350 miles. But those are the main highways. He was heading north. You guys have all seen off-road truckers. Or the ice road truckers,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And in fact, in recent show that they had where the EMS responded, there was a motor vehicle accident and the EMS responded, that was us.
Oh, okay.
But that's the highway he was on. And so this is it's kind of a good tourist highway, but it goes nowhere. If you drive it the full 500 miles, you hit dirt road and you get to Prudhoe Bay. But most people there's a couple little nice restaurants on the road, and, you know, just it's a nice drive. Actually, this particular road takes you to Chinook Circle Hot Springs, which is about 120 miles north. But again, it's a rural road that not a lot of folks are on it in any given time.
And did you drove, I assume once the ambulances got there, you drove him back to Fairbanks Memorial?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the only hospital that we have besides the military hospital.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And You said you had to use fixed wing plane. Do you not use helicopters then in Alaska?
Well, or is it just like that's a sad story. We don't have enough calls volume in the interior, Fairbanks and all of the outlying areas, to have somebody who has a helicopter, you know, a privately owned helicopter to respond. We had had the military air to safety and transport, the MAST unit. We had the only functioning MAST unit. It's the military helicopter that responds to on base, but they were allowed to respond to the civilians, and it was they were our only helicopter. When they went to Iraq 2 years ago, they were decommissioned. The MAST unit was decommissioned, so we no longer have helicopter. We have fixed wing, but no helicopter. In most of the STEAS area, we don't have airports or any runways, small runways that a fixed wing can get to. So no, we didn't. Now, in this particular case, because it was the 4th of July, I believe that the MAST unit happened to be down at Fort Greely, and so that's probably why it was not called. I wasn't actually on the call. We did some research on it, and I'm with the department, and we critiqued it. But I'm pretty much guessing that MAST was not available because they have their military requirement first and the civilian second. So if they had not come, it was probably because of that. We had a partnership with them, and we would train them to the EMT-3 level, which in Alaska is cardiac, IV and cardiac care. And the military trains them to the EMT-2 level, which is IVs. And then our office, Interior Region AMS Council, would pay for their training to get them to the 3 level so that they could respond at, you know, as high a level as possible.
Great.
Unfortunately, they're gone.
Well, thank you so much for telling us your wonderful story. It's always nice to hear stories about up north and how you guys, you know, do things up there. And it's really a great story.
Oh, thank you.
Open Airways podcasts are produced by FISDAP with support from EMSresponder.com. All recordings express the opinions and experience of the speaker and do not constitute legal or medical advice. This and other recordings can be found at www.openairways.net.